Produced by women, about women, Powerful Women Let's Talk is a series of interviews with women who have helped shape our community and transform who we are and how we live.
Hi there, I'm Jennifer Moss and excited to welcome you to this edition of Powerful Women Let's Talk. And I'm really excited for you to meet today's powerful woman. In many circles, she's a person who really needs no introduction, actually. But I am happy to let you know that we are talking to the one and only Diana Seeger, president of the Grand Rapids Community Foundation. Of course, you know she's a leader and a powerful woman, not only here in Grand Rapids, but also, you know, on the state level, on the national level. Of course, she's won numerous awards, like the Tribute Award and the Athena Award as well. And so, again, it's very exciting to welcome our powerful woman for the day, Diana Seeger. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure to be here.
You know, you always come through the station with smiles and good word and information for us to use. And so it's nice to be here today just to have a conversation with you. You know, you've been with, for those who don't know, so you've been with the Community Foundation for more than 30 years, over 30 years.
Yes.
You hold that position of leadership. Tell us what you do there and kind of give us the background. So for those who don't know what you do at the foundation.
Well, essentially, I would probably have a number of staff who wanted to know, would like to know, what do I do
what
there?
Do you do? Yeah,
and actually, I have such a tremendous team of staff. We have 30 staff. And we have built the strength of their knowledge, their experience for many, many years. When I started out, it was just me. And I took over the reins from a wonderful woman, Pat Edison, who was the first female executive director of the foundation. And she really showed me how it's done. So since that time, well, obviously, with just those many years, there's been so much that has gone on. But it started out where it was primarily making grant decisions to organizations. Mm-hmm. Over the years, however, the strength of our leadership and our influence and our voice has really just grown exponentially. And so in addition to making grants, there are a number of community activities that we're involved in, raising resources to make sure that we have the resources to fuel our nonprofit community and other partners. And so it's the days are full, and I would say that there isn't one day that's the same as the other. And
that kind of keeps you going, though. That's
it does.
A good thing.
Oh, yeah. There's no such thing as routine. And it's been a pivot with regard to the way that we have responded with working at home. And we know that we're privileged to be able to work remotely. And it's been good. We've got great technology, but also the personal contact has really been, I'm kind of a social person, so that's been
a little hard.
Yeah, a little hard. But I will say that not only has the staff really responded, so has our board, our committees, and really, I would say, leading with heart and love, and particularly now with all that is going on with racial inequity and the difficulty that has just really been magnified, and the disparities have been magnified. And so we've got a lot going on.
But as you look at those, Diane, I'm just going to ask you, you know, when you say they've been magnified, that's good for the community, would you say, and as it relates to the community taking action? And I noted your article, the community crisis responses need to lead with equity, and looking at everything from COVID to the racial disparities with George Floyd and the other things like that. So that kind of puts you guys in a spotlight of, you know, what do we do? How do we lead in these times?
You know, I would say addressing racial equity has been a real, it's not new to the Community Foundation. We have been, I would say, steadily moving in that direction. And actually, we put our stamp on our work leading with equity about 5-6 years ago, and certainly had been doing it before. We just didn't call it that. Mm-hmm. And I would say that what's been magnified is just the centuries of disparities that have been evident. And when we saw with the whole COVID crisis, and are still seeing the disproportionate number of, I would say, Latinx and Black people, Black and brown people, who are exponentially dying because of this. So
in that, large numbers.
In large numbers. And you know, the statistic of 10% of the population here in the Kent County area are Latinx, but 40% of the deaths are.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of work to be done. And yeah, it's magnified the problems. I would say that it's also brought out a lot of division, too. So hopefully we can address and mend that vision, because this community really, really needs to rally. It really needs to address racism head on in employment and in treatment of people and all of it. So
a lot of work yet to be done.
Yeah.
But as we look at you, you know, leadership position, what are some of, as we look back on years in the Community Foundation, and what are some of the traits that you like to see either within yourself, someone you've mentored, or those that you are working with as leadership qualities?
You know, leadership qualities are those where there is a tremendous respect being given to all people, but also being able to speak out and not having to wait for permission to do so. And certainly it's good to be decisive. I also would say that it needs to be measured a bit, so that we are really reaching out to a number of people before action is taken, not stalling, but making sure. And so when I see, particularly with female leaders, is that there's always been a little bit of a hesitancy, gee, should I really do this? And I can remember in my early days at the Community Foundation, and even prior to that, where I'd be standing having a talk to a female friend of mine, but you know, after a meeting, standing by the car and having some of the male leaders walk by saying, uh-oh, they're ganging up. And you know, probably we weren't talking about anything other than, you know, so it's a nice day, what's going on with you?
A normal conversation.
Yeah, so, and I would say that really, my mother was always famous for saying to me, you need to toughen up, kid. Mm-hmm. And I would say that over the years, given all of my experiences with a number of people, that I've had to toughen up, not being hardened, but to be really what I would say positively strong and firm.
And the way in which you handle things. And, you know, so, and many women deal with this as well. You make positive strides, you keep moving forward in your working world. What has it taken, though, for you to find your own voice, you know, voicing your own beliefs and be comfortable with being you?
Yeah,
because
yeah,
as you said, people will walk by and say something, you're standing at the car talking, and they have an idea of what that might be, but they don't really
know
you. How do you find your voice?
You know, it's funny. Back in the 90s, and I was serving on a Chamber of Commerce committee, and I was the only woman in a sea of very lovely, wonderful men. And I finally got the gumption one day, because they were saying some disparaging comments about a female leader, national leader. And finally, I just looked at all of them and I said, now, are you going to go home tonight and say this to your wife? Are you going to go home tonight and say this to your granddaughter? Are you going to say this to your daughter? And that you should not say it to me. I'm not just sitting here taking it. And from that time forward, there was a real recognition of, oh, okay, then, you know, we must stop doing that.
That's a good point. And they probably looked at that situation differently. And that helped them not only in that position with you, but in other instances too.
Yeah,
you probably
yeah.
set the bar high for them to do that. What about barriers? Have you anything along the way as you climb to success? I mean, you've been with the foundation for over 30 years, and we'll talk about what you did prior to that in a second. But what are some of the things that perhaps presented themselves as a potential barrier as you were coming along and moving on this upward track?
You know, my experiences are as a white female. So my experiences are the experiencing discrimination or attitude based upon my gender. I have not had to deal with the color of my skin or anything like that. So, and I don't want this to be misinterpreted as, gee, I know the plight of both black and brown people, because I don't experience it. I would say in those early years, it was the attitude and kind of scoffing at, well, what do you know? So I really, you know, I read books, I watched a number of films and videos. And I was raised during the time of, in my college years, of feminism. And so leaning on the authors back then and their strength. And, you know, that as much as many of those women were reviled, I found strength in what they were doing because they were doing it with humanity and compassion. Mm-hmm. And so I would say it was the barrier of attitude. And finally, I would say that over the years, to the point where now when I'm sitting in a committee or community event or whatever, and I'll say, now, you know, I'm not shy. And you hear snickers throughout mm-hmm. the day because they know I'm not shy.
Well, and that probably has to do, too, with when you were talking about finding your voice. So all of that kind of fits yeah. together. One piece of the puzzle as you grow and learn and, you know, in earlier years, you're maturing along the way. But then you set the tone.
Yeah.
And you don't have to deal with that right. anymore. So tell us, what did you do prior to being with the foundation?
You know, I'm going to tell you that my work with regard to equity really started when I was a teenager. And I grew up in the Detroit area, which is code for didn't live in Detroit. I was grew up in a suburb.
Yeah, the area.
The
yeah.
area, you exactly. know. I really would say that during the time of the 1967 uprisings was a real awakening for, I would say, for a generation. Unfortunately, that awakening also was, the other forces were at hand too. And that led me to really getting much more involved with civil rights. And my career path was really determined by the fact that, you know, everybody, every college student writes, I'm going to make the world a better place. And,
yes,
and
yes,
so
yes.
how's that working out for you? So, and I really focused I kept my eye on the ball with regard to what profession can I go into that really could do that. And I moved to Grand Rapids back in the early 70s and got married and subsequently divorced, but stayed here, mm-hmm. stayed here. And the thing that was that in my positions then was that I went back into grad school and got a master's of social work.
Going and, along that track yeah, of what
yeah.
you were.
And but I what I quickly realized, however, was that, yeah, social work is fine. However, I knew that I did not have the stamina to be a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And got much more involved with policy, planning, and administration from Western Michigan University. That gave me the strength to my first real job out of grad school. I had been a caseworker at the American Red Cross. But my first job out of grad school was with the United Way. Back then it was the United Way of Kent County. Today it's the heart of West Michigan
mm-hmm.
United
Absolutely.
Way.
Absolutely.
And that gave me the chops on how to go with regard to determining funding levels for various nonprofit partners, as well as getting involved in what I would say the work of social planning and community work.
A good forerunner to the community foundation.
Yeah. And so, you know, and that gave me knowledge of other people in the community who are leaders. And there were many, many lead, both male and female mm-hmm. leaders that I looked upon and became to know a number of people in the community. And that gave me the path to, gee, should I throw my hat in the ring for the position at the Community Foundation? And like I said, the woman who preceded me, Pat Edison, really, she is a spitfire. She emails me a lot and tells me, okay, this is good, this is not good, whatever. But she was the one that I think showed me the ropes those first few weeks of taking over the position and ultimately becoming the president of the mm-hmm. Community Foundation. And those moments of what I would say finding not only voice but the path are really critical. So yeah, my trajectory from a young kid to mm-hmm. to now really this was, in a way, I was my destiny.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And everything kind of aligned. So here's one of those questions that we all like to know when we talk and, you know, we have our chats. A lot of people search for the answer. How do you balance your work life and your professional life, the demands? You're the president of the foundation, so therefore you are very busy. You are out and about. I know you like to be out in the community, but I'm sure there are a lot of demands on your time. Yeah. So how do you balance that out? How have you found to do that over the years?
You know what? I would say sometimes I'm terrible at it. And sometimes I do find a tremendous balance. My friendships are very dear to me. And it's the friends who are my friends who keep me going. And certainly in infamous events in my life were things like we created Judy Lloyd, who passed away in 2005. She and I created something called the Tappers. And in the mid 90s, and decided that we were going to take tap dancing lessons.
Nice.
And,
I love it.
We convinced a number of other female leaders to join us. And so we became the Type A Tappers. And the studio where we went to was John T. Dance Studio on Eastern, just south of Elger, as we would always say. And that group of women, and many of whom still are, you know, we still get together. We just mostly drink wine and talk.
No tapping.
Well, yeah, the tapping days are over. But I have to say that was a wonderful time in my life. And just doing something that is so completely not, you know,
work-oriented. It allows you to relax.
Yeah, and just laugh.
Okay, so a little birdie told me, let's see, the laughter part. You have a love for art.
I do.
Art fairs. Is that some of what makes you spend your spare time doing that?
You know, and I'm missing all those art fairs this summer.
I know.
And it's gotten to the point where I don't have any more wall space for my...
You have your own personal private museum then.
Yeah, I do kind of. I had a wonderful designer assisted me this past year, Mary Whitty, in designing my kind of redoing, I would say, my main floor of my home. And she really helped me understand how to do a gallery wall. And then I started collecting glass over the course of the last few years.
Beautiful. Love
so, it. Yeah, I would say that, and had special shelves that were built and all that. So I'm a Libra, and Libras, you know, we're supposed to be the balance, you know, but I'd also say we'd like to toss a few bombs in for here and there too. But it really is the love of art and culture. Mm-hmm. And my favorite artist of all time is Michael Flagar, who's also a dear friend. And he kind of is embarrassed when he comes over to my house and he's like, look at this.
Well,
and he's, but anyway, it brings me joy and pleasure. And it's just been fun.
Absolutely. So, Diana Seeger, powerful women want to know, what makes you laugh?
I would say I enjoy a dry sense of humor, irony, what have you. And so it's I really do have to say that is that slapstick comedy doesn't do it for me. It's mm-hmm. really what I would say intelligent humor mm-hmm. does it for me. And
something underneath the wire sometimes.
Yeah, yeah,
you know, maybe you got to be quick to catch.
And sometimes
that.
A little naughty, you know. And so, but that, and I would say that really what makes me laugh is human interaction and watching people just enjoy life. And that really brings a big smile to my face.
Absolutely. Yeah. Enjoying life is so good. What might be, as we wrap this up, your favorite saying or motto, if you have one, to encourage others or whatever it is that keeps you going?
So a phrase that I, two phrases that I use that are not going to be deep or at all. One of them is that when anyone hears me say, here's the deal, they know they're going to hear a pitch or testimony or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I end many conversations at the office with peace, love, dove, because I am a child of the 60s. So, mm-hmm.
and peace, love, dove.
Peace, love, dove. And it just has become unnatural for over the years. And so that to me, it's those two phrases. Here's the deal.
Wonderful.
And peace, love, dove.
Peace, love, dove. I love that. And so I just want to say thank you for sharing your time with us today and you know, continue on the trek. We appreciate all that you do. And I want to thank everyone for listening for this edition of Powerful Women. I'm Jennifer Moss. Let's talk.
produced by women about women. These powerful podcasts focus on powerful women and how their strength transforms who we are and how we live. Want to hear more powerful women Let's Talk? Get additional interviews at WGVU.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Please rate and subscribe. Powerful Women Let's Talk is produced by WGVU at the Meyer Public Broadcast Center at Grand Valley State University. The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of WGVU, its underwriters, or Grand Valley State University.